The following is a production of DifferentBrains.com.
Hi, and welcome to Spectrumly Speaking. I'm Becca Laurie, your house autistic, also perhaps your favorite flavor of ice cream and your favorite website to Google on.
And I'm Dr. Kate Cody. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist who practices in New York City, located at Spectrum Services. And I work with kids through adults on the autism spectrum. And I supervise graduate students in training so that there's more clinicians out there who know how to also work with individuals on the spectrum.
Yay. Excited to be here for this week. We have a really interesting guest. But first, let me ask you how your week was, Kate.
My week was busy. I had a packed weekend of family time with my sister in Boston. So it was a really good weekend, but it was a busy weekend. Yeah, I feel like summer always ends up packed with way more things than I anticipate.
I agree. And I think it's somewhat to do with the fact that we live in some place with four seasons. I feel like if people were outdoors more of the year, we wouldn't have to like jam so much into such a short period of time, but we do it. And I like the quiet of winter, so I'm not going to complain. But my weekend was a little bit crazy for me. I went to the New York Hall of Science, which is a really fun place for me because I get to do museum stuff, but I get to touch things, which is always a good time for me. They had a super cool exhibit that was like an interactive wall. So it was essentially like the lights sensored your hands, like they could sense your hands. And you could interact with the wall and make plants grow in these different environments and stuff. And it was like super fun sensory room. But the entire place was full of kids because school was out. And so it was a lot of screaming. So that was a sensory push for me for the day, which left me exhausted.
Well, it sounds like I've never been to that museum. It sounds like it was a good time for you, though.
It was a good time. Yeah, I went with my almost nephew, and he's also on the spectrum. So it was a good time, the two of us just off doing our thing. And we had a good time. But by the end, we were both exhausted. That was it. Done. But yeah, if you live in the New York area, they currently have an Angry Birds Universe exhibit. And that seemed to be a big hit for people. So, well, today we have an amazing guest with us. Her name is Anne Lerdavin, and she is here with us. Actually, she lives now in America, but she's originally from France. So you guys are going to hear her accent as she goes ahead and tells us her story. She is actually an autistic and was diagnosed at age 46, a life-changing and life-saving event she traces to her Zen practice of the years preceding. Anler is an immigrant born in France in 1964. During Anler's childhood, her native France was in the grip of oppressive and now discredited theories about autism. Anler instinctively knew she had to flee France in order to survive. Upon arrival to the United States in 1987, Anler lived in Chicago, Illinois, where she married and had a son. The ensuing 18 years of child rearing, a tremendous challenge for an autistic mother, overwhelmed her and her life, but slowly but surely unraveled. Forever searching for answers to the challenges of an undiagnosed life, she moved to San Francisco, California in 1999. There she started Zen practice while she eventually became ill and hit rock bottom in March of 2000. A painful and debilitating movement disorder appeared in her left upper body. Anler was formally diagnosed in 2010. With proper medical care and many other supports, her life improved unexpectedly and dramatically. Please welcome Anler to our show.
Welcome, Anler. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
We're excited to have you.
We often start by asking people what their experience was in terms of how they went about getting a diagnosis. And it sounds like for you, you had a journey to get there. So could you tell us about how you were diagnosed?
Yeah, it was a journey indeed. I find it interesting that so the first 23 years of my life in France, they did not diagnose me. And then it took exactly another 23 years in the United States for a proper diagnosed. Eventually it was, I mean, I became so clearly and obviously ill that there were several events that precipitated, you know, the formal diagnosis. At first, there was a welfare case worker where I fainted, so they got me evaluated by their experts. And then they figured there that I should be enrolled in Social Security. And then after you have been enrolled in Social Security for 2 years, actually automatically the recipient is enrolled in Medicare. So once I got Medicare, you see, I was finally able to go see a specialist, a neurologist. And about that time, I could no longer go out. So a Zen friend helped me to go see the neurologist who evaluated me.
Mm. Wow. It is always a journey for us. I can tell you that much. For us women who are diagnosed later in life, we always have a journey to get there. Yes. So if you wouldn't mind, would you tell us a little bit about the state of autism acceptance in France?
Ooh, what a question. Well, you know what? It seems to me recently they have made huge advances. You know, the government got into the program, several years ago. So now there is more government-led resources. So they have centers now where they try to educate a little bit about it. And, you know, my book was just published in France, and I'm amazed, Becca, by how well-received it is over there. It's very strange to me because for 30 years it was like, well, you know, France, okay, I'm French, you know, but I did not really feel very French. Not that I do now, but they're really embracing me over there.
Amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing to me. Yeah.
Because it was not that way for a very long time there.
Right.
So
right.
Yeah. It's a very big growth to have that kind
there
of
is.
Acceptance.
Right. Yeah. Right. There's way more adult autistic. I mean, I have a French publisher and she sent me a few other books along with mine from other adults. And it's amazing. You know, I'm invited to the national conference in April and even the French vice president kind of listened about that. So you see,
it's amazing.
She might come to the conference too. Yeah. Amazing.
Do you feel like you might have been diagnosed either earlier, later, or not at all if you had remained in France and hadn't come to the United States when you did?
That's a very good question. Well, who knows? I really don't know. But I'm really scared. Okay. I mean, of this, I think it's Kate who asked that question.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So, to be honest, maybe it's no longer like that, okay? But for me, I'm still traumatized by how in France, I really feel like at that time, you know, that's a long time ago, lots of autistic children, when they were diagnosed, were automatically, I may be wrong, okay, I can't say that 100%, but that's really something that scares me, that they were automatically sent into some kind of institution and also having to take plenty of meds that may not really always help, you know? Mm.
Well, and I do know, you know, here in the United States, in terms of the history of developmental disabilities overall, including autism, but other conditions as well, that historically the push previously was, for individuals to be institutionalized. And I think that, you know, thankfully we've done as a field a great deal of research across education and psychology, to really understand how that is a major disservice to individuals. And I know at least here in the United States, that is no longer the case. And I think, you know, there is definitely much more support around a more inclusive model, and it's obviously still a work in progress. There's a long way to go.
Totally. I am so happy with you there. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad you say that, you know, it also used to happen in United States a long time ago, you know, so because I don't want to say that it's better, you know, anywhere.
Yeah, no, it definitely, I think it comes with our history almost everywhere.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah.
In terms of advocacy, because that's been a piece for you, I think, especially now that your book is being published over there and you're going to be over there, and kind of getting a view of what things are looking like in France now. What do you think that we can do as a country, the United States, for other autism communities in other countries? And do you think that there's an obligation for advocacy to go beyond the borders of our countries?
Another quite interesting question. These are questions I was never asked before. I like that. So is there a need to go beyond frontiers for advocacy? Well, I know for myself, yes, I would answer yes, because I'm totally in between two countries and I already have had to kind of advocate for other American authors. And anyway, so yes, and for me. Then for everybody else, well, you know, it really depends on the affinities of the person. But yes, if you know another country, by all means, I feel like the more people know about autism, the better it is. So whatever it takes. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, I know at least within the greater advocacy community, we don't really see our borders as much. I mean, I think we're all the folks that, you know, all our friends are in our computers. So I don't see myself, I don't see the borders as much. But I know when I look at the community as a whole, I see that we're missing the pieces of all of our cultural contexts in which the autism is kind of living, I guess. And so I do feel that we have the obligation, because what I find myself is in hearing the stories of other adults on the spectrum, even if we've been raised in other countries, we were diagnosed at different times in our life, our living experiences and our life experiences are really very similar. Our stories are the same. We have a lot of shared stories regardless. So I think that piece of it is really interesting and something to build on. So that's just my take on the advocacy piece.
No, I agree totally. Yeah.
And Laura, could you tell us a bit about your book being seen and kind of what made you decide to write it?
Yes. So, well, what made me decide to write the book being seen is, which is a memoir from my birth until I was formally diagnosed at age 46, was that as I was becoming more and more ill about, 10 years ago, I also developed something called pressure speech, where I wanted so bad to explain to people what was going on inside me, but nobody, you know, understood anything of what I was saying. So anyway, two friends who were not together, but at a different time, two Zen practitioners too, told me, well, maybe you should write it down. So I did. I wrote it down, and that's how my book came into existence.
Great. And then, you know, you talked a little bit for us about the Zen stuff, and maybe you could let listeners know kind of where you are in your life and how, you know, the Zen practice plays a part in your life.
Yeah, it plays a huge part. This is the underneath everything in my life. I can't say it again, okay? I mean, I know it's very hard to explain, but so for now, I find myself trying to kind of bring Zen to the autism community. So I started, my partner and I, 5 years ago, started a yearly retreat, a meditation retreat for people on the autism spectrum. And then 5 months ago, I also started my own monthly group for people on the autism spectrum and also neurodiverse, you know, so I'm not saying, no, you can't come because you're not autistic. Okay, that's not how I but so I do that at Dominican University here in San Rafael, California. And that's usually the first or the second Saturday of every month. And I love it. That's where I find the only place where life makes sense to me, honestly.
It's lovely to have found a place. I myself am a mindfulness practitioner, so that's where I find my space. And I know Kate also does some of the stuff that's non-Western traditional medicine. And so we are big believers in that there are other alternatives to not necessarily traditional Western medicine. And so it's been a pleasure to have you sharing our mindset here.
Thank you.
We really enjoyed your interview. And if you just want to let people know really quickly where they can find you if they're looking to take one of your classes or to read your book.
Mm-hmm. So basically everything is on my website, which is my name, first and last name, AnnLoreDevin.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for giving us your time here today. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Becca and Kate. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So I think that, you know, it's really fascinating to kind of hear about, you know, the different experiences in different countries in terms of kind of how communities are coming together to support individuals on the spectrum or understand individuals on the spectrum and make sure that there's, you know, an awareness in terms of at a national cultural level. And I think that that's what Inler was saying about kind of what is happening in France right now is something that I hope is happening more and more all over the world.
I hope so. I mean, I'm hearing a change of language and where we're moving away a little bit from a lot of the old stigma words that, you know, are kind of tainted with some really negative. And the word that Inler used, which I think is an important word, she used the word traumatizing. Mm-hmm. In terms of going back there and sort of seeing, trying to live a life there, but that it was not something that she could do and that she knew she needed to get out. That feeling of being traumatized is something that's been coming up a lot lately, especially in articles out there and even in conversations if you're just online, because I think that's a really important piece for those of us that get a late diagnosis. So I think it's important that she mentioned that because there are cultural differences for us, you know, in terms of where autism sits is, you know, in your culture as a whole, not just as in terms of the autism culture. So I think that's an interesting piece that she was touching on. It's something that I don't think we give enough time to here in the States. We are very, I think, America-centric in our thinking, so we don't necessarily explore what's going on in other countries. So it's an interesting place to be thinking about things from.
Mm-hmm.
I know I actually have had a very large circle of friends in France, and I think they are all, as a country, all of the autistics there are sort of traumatized in that way. And I know for us here in the States, in terms of our research and our articles and where we're moving as a community, you know, I always am looking internationally because it seems to me the UK and Canada and Australia are sort of ahead of us in that game. And almost all of their research, they're sort of a step ahead of us in terms of acceptance. So it's important, I think, that, you know, America stays in touch with that.
Well, and I think that, you know, there's positive steps in the right direction in terms of incorporating the perspectives of adults on the spectrum in research design. And all that is just starting to happen. And obviously I think there's a long way to go in terms of really fair representation, of, you know, that perspective in research. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the movement is happening. And I think, you know, that's really exciting, I think, to see, because it wasn't that long ago where that wasn't included at all. In terms of how people were researching autism or thinking about autism.
I mean, I absolutely agree with you. And I think that we are moving, probably this is one of the faster moving movements, I would have to say, I think, in terms of how quickly we've made an impact in changing the language and taking back our language as well. So I'm seeing the word neurodiverse so much more than I was seeing it 2 years ago when I first learned about it, you know, and it's sort of the publications are getting stronger in that concept. And I think technology is doing a really good job of cutting down the borders. You know, it's sort of like ideally people maybe would like it if we were kind of subset that way, but I just don't think that that's, you know, a realistic way that life works anymore. We kind of are really all just a Skype away from each other. So that's changing things, I think, as well. And I do think that there is an obligation from this country to participate in the global community.
Well, and I think kind of the neurodiversity movement, if you will, is starting to kind of permeate all over the place. I know that there's more and more employers who are really embracing neurodiversity and kind of understanding, you know, more of a strength-based approach to kind of employing individuals on the spectrum. I know that's been happening. I think, you know, there's a lot more kind of understanding of neurodiversity in schools. And again, none of this is perfect. It's all just things that are in progress. And, you know, there's still work to be done. But I do think that a lot of this kind of not just inclusion, but understanding work is happening.
I agree. And I think in general, we just aren't big positive people in this country, and we forget to say our pleases and thank yous. And I think we need to be grateful for where we're at right now, and that we are having these conversations, and that all of this stuff is changing, and we are at a movement place. And it's just important to kind of jump onto the momentum and remember that, you know, it's sort of up to us to keep it going, because it is a lot of change very fast. We've come very far in a very short period of time. And that's sort of impressive, but I think we can't do it without each other is sort of a place that I'm at. You know, I want to know, what are the UK scientists learning that, you know, maybe we're not focusing on here, but maybe we're doing something that they're not. It's the whole shared data concept that is very important to our community. It's something that's pretty heavy in the researchers. And I think, we all need to be taking a scene from their book, you know, like a playbook kind of deal from them, because there's now some, at least in our country, I know we have at least two data sharing programs where they're, you know, everybody's sort of sharing the same group of people and their information. So that's been an interesting thing to watch, but that's growth and change. And then what I think I would ideally like to see is for us to be doing more information and presentation exchange. In terms of advocacy and support systems, you know, what's working for you guys? What's working for us? What's not working?
Well, and I think that part of that is also when you look at even just the way the autism community itself has evolved in recent years, I think that there's much more of a community of adults now. Mm-hmm. And I think historically the community was primarily parents and caregivers.
Yeah.
And I think that that's been an evolution too, where you have a lot more adults on the spectrum who are really self-advocating and advocating for one another. And I think that's a shift that's been happening and is starting to be reflected on like the academic or research side. But that, you know, if you look at the history, I think, you know, the community has evolved too.
Yes, 100%. I mean, and that's the growth that I think I see that's to me happening in leaps and spades. When you look back historically at how long these kinds of social changes take, it usually takes much longer, but we've had rapid change in our community. And that's, you know, that also means we lose out on the adjustment period when things happen that fast. And so we feel the growth, like it's an upheaval a little bit. Mm-hmm. And who, you know, everybody kind of is picks their side or picks their route. And then we just wait for the pieces to fall because it's sort of happening too fast, so to speak. So I think that part of it is interesting, too. But like in terms of the international community, I'm sort of curious as to why we are so at such different pacings in terms of things, because we do share at least the global internet, but it seems that there's something about the way that the culture is, and perhaps maybe it's something as basic as just the way the university system is set up, that it seems to just be a little bit ahead over in the UK. And so I am curious what they're doing differently from us.
Well, I mean, I think that the other thing that has been happening that I know the United States is absolutely a part of is that autism research in general has been, you know, traditionally in academia, you know, most people aren't interested in sharing their data. They're not interested in sharing their research. But with autism, that has actually been a significant shift. And there is a lot of data sharing and pooling and kind of collaboration across international multi-site studies. And so I do think that there is a lot of that happening. But I think it's not always focused on things like, for, well, just like a concrete example, it's not always focused on supports for adults on the spectrum, or it's not necessarily focused on like things that will actually help people function in everyday life.
Right. It's
it's often focused on genetics or other elements, and not that that research isn't useful. It's just that it isn't necessarily the thing that the community is trying is in need of or what they're advocating for right now.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that's a constant conversation here. And so I'm curious if it's a constant conversation elsewhere, because here that's one of our biggest debates is, you know, we appreciate that everyone's doing the research, but we're not getting the support. So what good does the research do for the people that are alive now? And so I wonder how that conversation goes. And so maybe that's really where we should leave it. And maybe we should ask you guys that are listening, you know, to continue this conversation, to talk about the greater neurodiversity community, the global needs for advocacy, and what we could be doing differently here or better here to help as the community as a whole, and where can we, you know, close those gaps that we see blatantly out in our community. So think about that, you guys, and definitely send us some emails if you have anything to say about it. We'd love to continue the conversation. I guess that about wraps it up for us today. So I hope you enjoyed our guest, Anne Lodavin. She's wonderful. And if you are looking for us, you can find us at differentbrains.com, or you can check out their Twitter at diffbrains, or look for them on Facebook. If you're looking for me, you can find me at www.beccalaurie.com on LinkedIn, Facebook, or Twitter.
And I can be found at Dr. Cody at SpectrumPsychServices.com or SpectrumServicesNYC.com. And please be sure to subscribe and rate us on iTunes. And don't hesitate to send questions to SpectrumlySpeaking@gmail.com. And let's keep the conversation going.
Spectrumly Speaking is a production of Different Brains. For more information, visit us at differentbrains.com.